Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Bev, who is here to speak with us about her experience of coming on retreat. Welcome, Bev.
Thank you, Jan.
Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
So we just thought you'd be such a great candidate to talk about your experience of what in particular kind of physically coming on retreat adds to your practice. Because from the way I've heard you talk about it, you were participating in practice for quite a while before you came physically on retreat. And, you know, from everything you've said and what I project, just having a great, you know, seeing a lot and getting so much out of it, you know, participating in year-long retreats and radio shows and other kinds of far-flung activities and really, you know, transforming and seeing so much. And then coming on retreat, and I've heard you speak about the difference that you feel like kind of the unique place that coming on retreat physically has in your practice. And I wonder if you could speak about that.
Sure. Well, it's kind of like, I guess, preparing to playing on a ball team or playing the piano. You can practice and practice. And even when you're practicing, say, a ball team, there are other mm-hmm. people there. And you're the whole goal is to play in the game, to get to the game or play the piano or whatever. And there's just nothing like the experience of actually taking all that you've practiced and bringing it to a point where you put it into action. It's just goes back to that you cannot understand till you experience it. And that's what going on retreat did for me. All these things I've been practicing all these years just came together and made sense, and I was so supported. And it became a real, all the stuff I've been practicing became very real to me on retreat.
That is really fun, Bev, because we often use sports analogies and teams and that sort of thing, but I've never heard it expanded in the way that you just talked about it. That really, not only does it bring your game to a whole other level, but I projected in what you were saying, just so much fun, right? And that
it's to exciting get to do.
To get to execute it out there in the.
And then to do it with the Sangha and to walk in the room, and even though it's a privileged environment, the energy and the people that are there that you've heard their voices for years on open air or different places, it's just, it is hard to explain until you actually experience it.
Yes, yes. And since we don't look at each other, you get to, that's what their socks look like. That person that I've heard for years.
It's still the same. It's like, you know, I could feel when I'd hear someone talk or my reflective listening former buddy might be there. And you just feel that connection and you feel the community, even though there's no physical interaction or socializing. It's the strongest connection I've ever, you know, I feel it as strong as I do someone I've known for years and years and years. It's wonderful.
It is
wonderful. And you can't do that unless you're in the person's presence.
That's right. It really is a whole different thing, as we would say in California, a whole different energy.
Yes, it is. And another thing I saw is that when I'm at home, you know, when you're in your daily life and you think, oh, if I just had more time, I'd meditate, or if I had more time, I'd record and listen more, and this is keeping me. But at retreat, you don't have those distractions. You have no excuses. All you have to do is be on time for the activities and take care of your, you know, your physical, you know, keep yourself clean and just get there on time.
That's right.
And boy, that's, you know, and when you realize, you hear the same voices saying the same thing that they say when you think, oh, well, I could do this if it weren't for this. Well, on retreat, you see that's not true.
Exactly. You see that lie. I mean, it's so true. When we're on retreat, our, quote, job is to be on retreat and to do the work and to see what we see and to do the recording and listening. And I'll tell you, you know, in my experience, in terms of, I know for me, when I was not living at the monastery and would come on retreat, one of the big things, speaking of money, we just finished that focus on the year-long retreat, was you know, the voice that would say, well, I mean, you're not going to get, you know, there's nothing you're going to walk away with. You're not going to have a new car. It's not a, it's not a whatever. Like, I mean, I don't know. That's a lot of money to spend. And just that sense of, wow, there is nothing more worth the investment than giving myself that time to just completely be dedicated to my practice for that length of time.
And I found, like, I just completed my second retreat. And I mm-hmm. think you open it up, what, 3 months before
yeah,
the actual
like
you can
that.
Register? And I mm-hmm. just promised myself there was not going to be any waffling. When that opened, I was going to sign up. And I did. Mm-hmm. And then it's just
good
done,
you.
You know. And
good for
and
you. Yeah.
We find the way to get money for what we want. And I just think
that's so true.
You really see how that's just not an excuse. It's just not an excuse. So for
that's
me, that, anyway.
Yep. Yeah, that's such a great point. I think Sherry even made that point on one of the morning shows in this last focus, if I remember correctly, that, you know, if we indulge that conversation of, well, I don't have the money, so then that's sort of how it stays. But if we put our flag in the ground and say, nope, I'm going on retreat, there's a way in which life has a way of making that possible financially, time-wise, and otherwise. Yeah.
And I have found as I'm leaving one retreat, I'm thinking how can I make it where I can get to the next, you know, what am I going to
exactly.
do next? It's just
exactly.
infectious. It just perpetuates wanting to continue to do this because it is like an experience like none I've ever had in my life.
And Bev, I want to ask you in particular because, you know, we're heading into the retreat season of There Is Nothing Wrong With You. Every year we do a handful of There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats because it's a retreat that's in high demand. And I know that that was the first retreat you came on. You came and did that retreat with us here at the monastery. So I would ask you in particular, what would you say about where you felt like that retreat in particular, how that has impacted your practice?
Well, I felt that was the starting point. It's kind of like I didn't want to skip that. I wanted to,
yeah.
even though I'd been practicing for a while and I felt like I understood the basics, that was the starting point. And I would say if I'd been practicing for 30 years, I would still, you know, that was just the starting point. I felt that's where I needed to go because I've seen as I go through these things, this curriculum that you follow in everything is very deliberate and very well thought out and planned to build, one builds on the other. I've seen that. And it just made sense for me to start out there.
Yes. Yeah, that was so well put. I mean, that because that retreat really does build the foundational tools of practice. And as you say, once you've done that retreat, and again, everyone who comes on that retreat has read the There Is Nothing Wrong With You book because that's a requirement. But to a person, people will say, oh, projection, right? Or, oh, beliefs and assumptions, because we get to have the direct experience of those foundational tools. And there's really a way in which all of our practice is built on that foundation.
Yes. And all the terminology and all, it's just all covered in that retreat. It's just it's just a great place, a great foundation, that was my experience. No matter how long I've been practicing and what I knew, I learned so much about myself in that retreat.
Yes. Oh,
and it's a very safe, you know, I don't know where else you could go in such a friendly, safe environment to work through all these issues that come up when you're there on retreat. It's just with such a compassion. I mean, it's just modeled, that kindness, the acceptance.
Yeah.
It's just such a safe place to be.
And it's extraordinary, isn't it, Bev? As you're talking, I'm getting goosebumps because one of the things that's so impactful for me, being one of the facilitators of the retreat, is just people's generosity and courage in what they bring to it. Isn't it extraordinary? The people that you end up sitting in that room with and what they're willing to look at and what they're willing to talk about and go through, it's life-changing for all of us, for the person who's going through it, but for all of us who get to witness it and, in a sense, participate in it.
And it just reinforces that we are all alike. It really
puts
self-hate out there, and to see it's the same for everyone. It's not just me. It's the same for everyone. And we're all just there for, we all are so much alike in what we deal with in our daily lives. And it really exposes self-hate. really exposes it for what it is.
It does. And one of the things I think that happens, and again, I've heard so many people say this, is, I mean, we just fall completely in love with each other, right? Because that kind of vulnerability that you see people put out there, and, you know, the worst of the worst that they're putting out in the middle of the room, that this, here's the thing that the voices say to me, and this is what makes me a terrible person. And meanwhile, at the end of the week, you just love them like crazy because you've seen their the authenticity, and then we realize, oh, maybe that same thing is true with me. Maybe I'm not
like
lovable, too.
It is hard to explain. You have to come and experience it, and if you do, you will never I couldn't imagine regretting putting yourself in that position. It's just a joyous, wonderful, heart-opening experience.
Boy, you're taking
me
right there, Bev. Thank you. I'm having the experience right now as we're talking.
It is. It's glorious. It's just glorious.
It is glorious. So we're actually right at the top of the hour. Was there anything else you wanted to add in, Bev, before we
I would just say, if you're having fears, if you're having doubts, it's not coming from your heart. It's coming from self-hate. So listen to your heart and go to a retreat.
That people will often say is, the workshop begins the minute I sign up for the retreat. Right? And the voices are going to ramp up, and they're going to do this, and they're going to do that. And, you know, that's why we've got radio shows for people to call into and reflective listening buddies to process with. And because it really, it's all part of the workshop.
Right. I remember sitting shortly before I came last summer and thinking, oh, this and that. And it just dropped in. There is nothing wrong with your retreat. There's nothing I can do wrong. You know, there's just not.
Exactly. That can't be the answer. And I'm going to find that out. Even though, as you said, even though I know that intellectually, I'm going to have my direct experience of that. How extraordinary.
It was great. I highly recommend it.
So good. Well, Bev, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon to talk about
it. My pleasure.
Okay.
I was happy. Great. Thank you, Jen. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, Bev. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
That was a delightful conversation.
Wasn't it? I'm going to sign up for a retreat.
Great.
You know, I got to say, I do consider myself probably the luckiest person in the world because I get to spend so much time on retreat.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Because very few people could actually get to do as many retreats as I get to do. So I'm lucky. It's everything Bev said. You know, it is just the best time, period. Just the best time.
Yes, and I was, as you're talking, I'm appreciating how, I think it was Jen who said a couple of times of physically going on retreat. And it just landed, you know, because we talk about all these virtual offerings, and then there's physically going on retreat, and Bev was talking about, you know, putting into practice everything that I've heard on the phone and the radio show and the email classes and all of that.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing like it. I mean, the virtual stuff is wonderful, and I'm really grateful. I mean, nobody loves the year-long retreat or this more than I do, but it's not like being with people in person.
Yes.
You know, just all right there together, all focused on the same thing, and what was indicated, you know, you realize how much alike we are. And how dear people are. So easy to forget, you know, in our internet, television, you know, all of what we see as society. It's easy to get an impression that people are not always good, and people are not always good. That was poor phrasing. People are not always good. People are very dear, and for the most part, kind and compassionate and caring and especially people who choose to go on retreat. So it's a wonderful, way to be with our fellow humans.
Yes, it is. That's my experience, definitely. And I have announcements here.
All right.
Practice weekends at the monastery offer an opportunity to deepen support for awareness practice in the peace and beauty of the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California. These weekends include a practice activity and guidance with Sherry or Ashwini. A practice weekend is coming up May 16th through 19th. Journey through the poems of the great mystics at a brand new retreat at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in May. The Blessed is the Knowledge of Emptiness retreat offers an opportunity to have your own direct experience of the divine shining through. This retreat, May 27th through June 1st, includes guidance with you, Sherry, and is for those with an established awareness practice.
Yeah, and to clarify that, an established awareness practice with this practice.
With this awareness practice.
Just because. And the just because is because it's twofold. I mean, a lot of people have a lot of awareness practice, but to come here and be with a new sangha and be in a new place and that sort of thing, it would not support the work of the retreat. So putting those two things together, you know, old timers in this sangha, people with a deep practice in this sangha.
Yes. And the powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats that we just heard about provide an opportunity to see directly how we are rejected and punished by the voices of self-hate and to discover how to let that go. This foundational work is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. Two retreats are coming up at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, June 8th through 15th, and June 29th through July 6th. And for these and other opportunities, please visit livingcompassion.org. Okay, and a couple of reminders for today's show. If you'd like to talk with Sherry today, press *6 and then 1. That's how you make guest show. And a conversation on one topic of about 5 minutes in length is great.
Okay.
Okay, Sherry, you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello. Hi. Can you hear me all right?
Can hear you just fine.
Hi, Sherry. This is Sharon calling. It's my first time calling open air.
Yeah. Well, good. Welcome aboard.
I feel like I'm getting ready to go on stage, very nervous, you know, my stomach has butterflies. Yeah, I called tonight because I have an issue with sitting. You know, I know how we always do it. We count to 10, we breathe, count our breath, and then we start over again.
Mm-hmm.
But many years ago, when I first started meditating, I deduced that I really couldn't allow myself to just breathe, that I had to more or less do it, you know, like breathe and count and breathe and count. Because when I try to just sit there and not breathe, I can't do it. I can't just allow myself to breathe. So what I do is I just more or less breathe. I mean, I breathe and I count and I breathe and I count. But I was told you're supposed to just let yourself breathe naturally. I can't do that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So feels like the breathing has to be controlled.
Yeah. I can't and the thing is, it's kind of like a thing with me. I think ego takes it over.
Yes.
And then I find myself waking up in the night and I feel that same sense of not being able to breathe again. And then after a while I forget about it, or I talk to my husband about it, and he'll say, "Oh, relax, forget about it," and it's stuck, and I don't do that anymore. But I actually thought.
So it's when you're thinking about it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's when I'm thinking about it. But just coming back to the meditation, I was watching a video series about thinking and the brain and all that, and one of the doctors on there said that you shouldn't control the breath, that it's extremely bad for the whole system. And I thought, oh no, that's what I'm doing. And so it's a real, I can't fix it. I just can't.
Well, here's the thing, Sharon. Here's the thing. You know, people say all kinds of stuff. And all kinds of people say all kinds of stuff. But that doesn't mean what they're saying is true.
I mean,
people have been doing breathing exercises for thousands of years. Thousands of years. Incredibly wise and awakened, enlightened people have been doing breathing exercises. So, you know, okay, there's one person's opinion, but I wouldn't write that in stone. And so there are a couple of things about that. If you were doing pranayama, breathing exercises, you would be doing various things to control the breath.
Yeah.
And lots of people do that, and they're actually fine. In fact, probably those people doing those kinds of things are more fine than most people because they are really focused on breathing, and so they're actually breathing. And so many people, you know, don't actually breathe. They breathe so shallowly that, they're breathing into the very top of their lungs because the stress and anxiety, and they're in their heads and all of that sort of thing. So one of the things that I would encourage you to do is not affirm anything, like what you can or can't do. Because until we practice with something, we're not good at it. Right? So you have not practiced with being able to just relax and breathe and let the breathing be what the breathing is. You know, as the Buddha said, when it's a short breath, you notice it's a short breath. And when it's a long breath, you notice it's a long breath, which I think was his way of saying, you know, don't tie yourself in a knot over this. Just notice, as we do in practice, and just see what happens without letting the head get all involved.
Well, I did say to myself, okay, you're just going to breathe. I'm just going to let myself breathe. And then when I did that, the breath was real shallow. But I was focusing on it so much that the whole meditation was about that. I didn't feel like I could go very deep or anything, but it was a very shallow breath. And maybe that's what I'm supposed to do, as you say.
Well, here's the thing. I wouldn't. So I've been doing this for a long time, right? And I still don't have ideas about how things should be. Mm-hmm. So the little thing that I focus on when I'm breathing is, and I'm not thinking about this, but this is the sort of the attitude of mind, which is just sitting and relaxing, and breathing, and noticing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's it. Mm-hmm. So we're not trying to get anywhere or accomplish anything or, you know, have a particular experience. We're just sitting there and relaxing and breathing and noticing. And if you do that, all will be revealed.
Okay. All right.
It just will. Yeah.
Okay. I did notice that when I was starting to get clutched up again, I just would relax that area around my heart, and I would calm mm-hmm. down. So I think relaxing is a big part of it.
Yep. And you can use the breath to relax, to help you relax, right?
So yeah, but then I'm back to controlling it again because I'm taking in the breath and, you know.
Well, maybe. But if all you do is just take a breath in, you know, a nice long deep breath, and then you let it out slowly, you know, just, and you feel your shoulders drop and the tension goes out of your belly, and, you know, that's okay. There aren't any rules for this.
Okay. So I could just keep doing it the way I am doing it, which is really just taking nice deep breaths and counting them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could notice that you want to relax as you're doing that.
Yeah.
And so you kind of check in with your body, and if the shoulders are up around the ears, then you let them drop. Let the belly relax, you know. So you're just staying in your nice upright posture, and you're relaxing, and you're noticing, and you're breathing, and you're not to feel like you're going to get somewhere. So as I say, I've been doing this for countless, and I still am constantly seeing new things in that process.
Sure. Sure. But I find one thing that I just say one more thing about it, and that is that when I sit, I focus on the breath and I focus on being present. So if a thought comes along, I realize it, I start over again, and I come back to being present. You know, I can see the wall,
there you go.
And I'm present again. And I find that mm-hmm. I can go quite deep. So maybe it's okay. Maybe if I quit worrying about it, it won't.
Yeah, maybe there's no problem.
Well, there might be a little problem.
But that's the thing. You know, conditioned mind wants to have opinions about all of this, wants to watch you and tell you whether you're doing it right or you're doing it wrong or how you could this or how you could that. That's not what we're doing. I mean, you notice that, but you don't want ego, conditioned mind, to be your meditation guide.
No.
You just don't want that. So as you say, you notice that come up, and you just drop it, and you come back to breathing and counting.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I really wanted to talk to you about this, so I'm really glad I was able to get on. Thanks a lot.
I'm glad, too. I'm glad, too. And keep me posted about it, okay? Let me know how it goes.
Will do. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Sharon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sharon. Sherry, sounded like we were getting very close to nothing wrong there in that conversation.
I know. We were closing in on it, weren't we?
Sure sounded like it to me.
Yeah.
Yes. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Good evening. It's Jane in Colorado.
Well, good evening,
Jane.
How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good, but I definitely needed to be in the queue, and I loved that last call about breathing. That was really helpful. Thank you to the both of you. I have a lot of decisions to make with my health crisis, and conditioning so wants to be involved, and I don't want it to be. No. And it's just so interesting to watch because I'm going through the routines of, you know, multiple meditations and recording and listening, though I only do that in the morning, so I probably just called in to have you tell me to do it more. Between the year long. And I've realized there's just this underlying or sort of overlaying level of conditioning that my daughter helped me get aware of, and it's like I'm stuck under a rock, sort of.
Ooh.
Does that make sense? You know, it's just sort of like a dark cloud looming, saying, you know, and I'm like, should I quit Western medicine or should I keep going with chemo? You know, these questions are just all over the place. And I know they're all in the future, so that's good. See, I just needed to call and hear myself.
There you go. But yeah, that, so, now you just made the biggest argument for recording and listening, right?
Yes, because that's listening to myself.
You just needed to hear yourself.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's, instead of Sherry, it's my mentor. Yeah, uh-huh. On the other end.
And and so conditioning, if I'm understanding you, conditioning is trying to insert itself by having you need to look at things in the future to make decisions that actually don't need to be made today. Is that true?
Yes. Yes, but they're pretty darn serious, and they need to be well thought of, and I might need to make it tomorrow or the day after. So there is some logical thinking about, you know, weighing out where I am. But boy, conditioning doesn't help. Oh, really?
No. No.
Yeah.
It doesn't. And you know, Jane, I would actually disagree with you.
Okay.
I don't think it takes logical thinking. I don't think you need to weigh anything out, because that's where conditioned mind gets us, right? It wants to drag you now up there into the world of duality to, well, this and that and this and that. Whereas I would bet what would be really helpful for you is to, of course, I'm going to say recording and listening, but you know, you could do it with another person if you could get them to just be quiet and let you work through it on your own. For you to talk out all of the things going on with you, you know, your concerns about this and your fears about that and what about this and what about that, but you're actually saying it out loud to yourself, and then you're going to hear it rather than having ego turn it into a ping pong match in your head, which is not actually aimed at getting you to any place of you know, ease and comfort and that sort of thing. It's just there to try to work up the most amount of anxiety so that ego gets the most amount of attention.
That is very, very helpful. Thank you.
You know. I mean, you may not know right now in this moment, but you will know in the moment in which you need to know.
Yes. Oh boy, did I need to call in. You know how you know something, but you're not living it or acting on it. It's like, I know that, and I forgot. So
yeah.
Thank you for the reminder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've heard me tell this story, but there was a gal who was, she was right at that age where it's now or never with having a baby. And she was in that, you know, conditioned mind was just pulling her back and forth with the pros and the cons and the this and that, and what about this and what about that. And so we were talking about it, and I said, okay, here's the thing. This is what I would encourage you to do. Pick a date, you know, not that far in the future, but you know, in the future. And tell yourself, when I wake up in the morning on, so today is what, Tuesday. So I wake up on Saturday morning, I'm going to know what I choose. And then on Saturday morning, you wake up and what's there is what's there. Now, of course, conditioning is going to come in with, no, that's not, you've got to, right? But it's always going to do that, right? And so then your work between now and Saturday, if say you pick that day, whatever day you pick for you, you're with her. You know, you're constantly talking with her and listening to her and getting clear about everything that's going on with her, about all of this. She could just talk as much as she needs to, and you'll listen and provide whatever encouragement you can, and then you're moving to a place of peace.
Thank you. That's I needed that specific guidance like that. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
because you know how to be with her, right?
Yes. Yes. She's usually quite young, but yes, I definitely know how to be with her.
Well, that's important, though, Jane. That's really important because over this next little time, you want to talk to everybody.
Yes. Yes.
Right? You want to talk to the mother. You want to talk to the wife. You want to talk to the young person. You want to talk to the friend. You want to talk to the professional person. You want to talk to everybody.
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 Yep. Good. That's very helpful.
Let them say whatever they need to say and be heard.
Oh, that's why I feel like I'm stuck under a rock. Because
yes.
I'm not allowing myself to come out and express
That's
all
right.
that I'm feeling and thinking.
That's right. That's right.
Oh.
Yes. Ego wants to keep you under that rock where it can, again, jerk you in this direction, then jerk you in that direction. Well, what about that? Well, what about that? Well, what about that? Well, what about that? And it's all intellectual stuff. You know, it's all stuff that's supposed
yes.
to happen in the head. And what you're getting to is all the stuff that happens in the guts and in the heart, where people are.
What was the first thing? What was the first thing you said before heart?
The guts.
The guts. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
way down there in those first and second chakras, first and second and third. You know where all that stuff is going around. And then in the heart, and just whatever everybody needs to say, and that, you know, the rock's going to lift off and the light's going to shine through because you're here and you're taking care of yourself. You're here for yourself. And that's where we want to be.
Because I want to hear myself. That's a primary way to take care of myself. So,
yes. Exactly.
Oh, thank you.
Get out that recorder. It's your best friend. You know, it's not just a
Absolutely.
Morning friend. It's an all-day, everyday friend.
It's an all-day friend. That's so
yep.
good.
And if people want to talk in the middle of the night, you know, they can talk in the middle of the night.
All-day and all-night friend. Perfect.
That's it. Yep.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Michael.
Thank you, my dear.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Deep bow.
All right. Gosho.
Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Jane. And Sherry, I appreciated that reference to the all-time friend, the friend that is always available to us, because that's what I need.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, sometimes we feel like we are the friend. You know, we identify more with the sort of the compassionate place that wants to make it safe and kind for everybody. And then sometimes we're the person who really needs that compassion and kindness to be there for us as we talk through and look at what we're struggling with and suffering with. So we just go back and forth. And that little mentor in that little plastic suit, you know, is just always there to be whatever it is that we need in any moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. And Sherry, we are going to hear from our sponsor now, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, we have another caller here. Are you there, Sherry?
Sorry, I was muted. Yes, I am.
Okay.
Sorry
just
about
checking.
That.
All right.
All right.
Double muting here.
Yeah. The old double muting trick.
Yeah, the old double muting trick. All right. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Chrissy from North Carolina.
Hey, Chrissy. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. How was reentry?
Reentry was fine. It's hard to explain. You know, people will ask you how their treat was. It's like, how do you tell someone how the retreat was, you know? And then I tell them about the privileged environment, and they're like, what?
Yeah.
You could never do that. Like, you definitely could do that, you know?
Uh-huh.
But it's
pretty addictive, isn't it?
It's addictive, the privileged environment. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Yes. It is. It's so great. It's powerful. It's,
mm-hmm.
I had a lot of resistance getting in the queue tonight. I actually have it set on my calendar to call Open Air at a certain time, and it popped up on my phone. And I heard a voice. Well, no, I think what was authenticity say, oh, you know, you have time tonight to call Open Air. And then I immediately heard a voice that went, oh, no, you can't tonight. You know, so really quick. And
uh-huh.
So I thought, well, okay, that means I have to call in. So I'm glad I got on. but I did want to just share an awareness that I had yesterday morning. I got up for work, and I did my yoga practice and everything, but I was feeling just kind of low about having to go back to work on Monday, and suddenly I got gripped. Something had happened the previous day that kind of puts me in that same condition spot that I've been in for 20 plus years, you know, that I'm finally starting to be able to redirect my attention away from, you know, and I've been, you know, really proud about it. You know, I've been like, wow, I've been able to redirect the attention and sort of maybe possibly transcend this piece of conditioning. And it came up, I mean, just rose up yesterday morning. And I mean, it caused me to get really emotional. Like I started crying. I was like, oh, you know, initially it was like, oh, no, not this again, you know. And so
mm-hmm.
I just sat with it. I allowed myself to cry and not get upset, not to go into a story, but just to feel it. And so as I was on my way to work, I was crying, and I was like, oh, no, I'm crying, and people are going to see that I'm crying. And I just let it. I still just let it happen. I mean, it wasn't like a cry, like a terrible cry, but it was like tears, and you could probably tell I was crying.
Uh-huh.
And it was like the most amazing thing happened to me, where I felt like it was more of a heart-opening feeling, almost like if I felt this conditioning come up again, that I would be okay. Like, it was just an, I'm okay, you know, and I can feel, it's okay to feel the way I feel. And just, and it just gradually just slipped away. It was amazing. I was really identified with it, and then it just left me for the rest of the day. And I felt very, very centered. And then I looked on my Twitter account. I have, I'm subscribed to a tweet from the Lion's Roar. I don't know if you've heard of that. But it tweeted an article about the very experience that I had, about how, you know, how it's so powerful to practice with that heart-opening feeling, even though it, you may not, you don't want to suffer, you know, you don't initially want to suffer, you know, it's just, what you do, it's like, it just felt like, it just felt very peaceful inside to,
well,
just to be with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it sounds like, it sounds like that, so there are tears, which we assume mean some kind of sadness, right? But it sounds like...
It was more like sadness because I was so hooked up and identified in this conditioning again. Yeah, that kind
yeah,
of just like...
But,
yeah.
But what happened was it was a letting go.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Because there was the conditioning, but what you did was go into a place of acceptance about it,
mm-hmm.
and it just passed through.
Yeah, I don't remember, especially with that part of that particular condition that I've been struggling with for so long. I've never felt that way before. I don't think I have. You know, I usually stay with, you know, I usually let it upset me and. Yeah, so I can...
And you didn't.
No.
You didn't. Yeah.
And I'm okay if it... It's like I'm okay if it comes up again.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
If it comes up again, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
You know how to be with it. Just allow it to be there and just watch it pass through and pass away. You don't have to dread it or fear it or... feel bad about it or let it control you?
There was no feeling bad about it. That was big, like, for me, that the no feeling bad, you know? And
yeah.
Yeah, everything you're saying is right. Yeah.
Wow.
So
that's huge, isn't it?
I thought it was really huge, yeah.
Oh, it is really huge because it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
And even though there will be other things, I can only guess, in your life that the conditioning will want to approach in the same way, mm-hmm. what the process that you went through with this will apply to everything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Because what happens to us is conditioning, ego's reaction, not the circumstance, right? So
yes.
Something happens, and if ego comes charging in with, oh, no, that's awful, and that's horrible, and it shouldn't be, and you shouldn't, and whatever, then I'm going to suffer over it. But if my response to it is, oh, that, then it'll just, the way you described it, it'll just slide away.
Yeah, like kind of like getting hit by a wave, you know. You kind of hit, sucked under, then you recover, you know. It was like a quick. Yeah, and I've been working with this for so long, you know, and it just shows me how that just constantly practicing with it, you know, finally just, I don't want to
pays
say it
off.
But, you know.
Oh, but it does.
Okay, you
doesn't
said it.
It
does. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and it's, well, you know, we could say, well, we're not doing it for that. Well, yeah, actually, we are. We're working to end suffering. So we just stay at it, and it's wearing away. It's losing its power. We are becoming more courageous, more willing to stay with, stay present with, be here through. And as we do that, it just, we're changing, and it changes. It becomes what it actually is, which is no big deal. And it only seemed like a big deal because we were listening to all of that stuff in our heads.
Exactly. I mean, it's always been a story in my head. You know, it's never been real. And
now we're in that place of trying to describe the retreat, right? but we know what we're talking about, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, well, it's so good.
I really appreciate you being here. Thank you very much.
For this radio show and the retreat
and all of it. Yeah.
All of it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you because it's always wonderful to, it's kind of what Bev was talking about on Good News Update. You know, it's when we experience practice. So you go on retreat, which I'm going to think had something to do with pushing you over the brink here. And you're doing the work and you're showing up and you're coming through and it works. It's really powerful for us to keep in mind that this is where we're headed and this is the work that we're doing. And if we stay with it, the transformation will happen. It will. It just can't not. So thank you for that.
Yes. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Go happy.
All right. Go happy. Good night. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Chrissy. Sherry, what I heard in that conversation was the power of presence when I stay with myself through a conditioned reaction and how quickly it passes through when I do that.
Yes. Yes, because it isn't anything, right? it's like if you've got a pipe and there's water coming through the pipe, and you put your hand on the end of the pipe, you can back the water up for a while, but depending on the pressure, sooner or later, it's going to come through, right? Well, the only reason that it was a difficulty was because I had my hand over the pipe. As soon as I take my hand away, the water just flows and there's no problem. And that's exactly what we're dealing with all this struggle that we have. You know, ego sticks its hand, metaphorically, over the end of that pipe and causes a big backup and a problem. And all we need to do, I mean, I know all, and make it sound so easy, but what we need to do is let go and let it be as it is, and as it is not a problem.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I can visualize that easily.
Yeah.
And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. It's Jeff in North Carolina. And I was
Yeah, I was going to say, not that long.
Right, definitely.
Since we've talked.
That's right. That's right. So I think I should just say, hey, great to say hello. And I've just put myself in the queue to, you know, do that thing that we do. And, you know, let somebody else have a little time tonight.
Well, that is extremely gracious of you. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Put yourself in the queue again before long, though, so we can catch up.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, I do it a lot.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Go happy.
Thanks, Michael. Go happy.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jeff. And let me bring on another caller here, Sherry. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry, Michael, and hey, Jeff. Thank you for that.
Who's this?
Hi, Sherry. Gabriel. Oh, so sorry. I always assume
hey, Gabriel.
Who I am. I'm Gabriel.
Gabriel. Hey, Gabriel.
Hey, Sherry. So I'm not on a black list where I don't get my calls answered, like conditioning tells me?
Apparently not.
Oh, man. Conditioning is wrong again. Go figure.
Oh, what a surprise, huh?
Yeah, and I kind of want to chat a little bit about that, about how the unknown, which is kind of like the fact of life, it seems, gets filled with these fake knowns, and how, I don't know, it's, there's a process going on with me of trying to figure out, like, why does conditioning do that? Or am I doing that? Or is conditioning doing that? And all of that stuff. And there's another aspect of me or another part of my being that knows that it's all irrelevant. But then there's the addiction to trying to figure it all out. And then I also want to talk about addiction as a process. So, let's start with that unknown thing and how the unknown thing and how conditioning kind of tries to pretend like, oh, I know the reason why your call's not getting answered is because Sherry doesn't like you and she told Michael, she texted Michael to put you on a blacklist and not select you from the queue. And I mean, obviously that's not true, but, and then it's like, ooh, that feeling of like, I know that. And then that feeling of morbid comfort.
That doesn't feel
like,
good.
At least, which part?
Being put on a blacklist because people don't like you and don't want to take your calls, which is, you know, the reason that ego would say such a thing, right? Because it feels bad.
Yes, and it also, in a morbid way, it feels good to pretend that I know something that I don't know.
Oh, yes. Yes, completely. So, you know, Gabriel, just about every religion and every spirituality and every psychology since there have been people have pointed to the ego, right, which is an illusion of being separate from life. That's just how it is. And that's what you're talking about. That's what wants to know. It wants to pretend that it knows. Because that's the way to get attention. That's the way to stay in charge of people's lives. Because if we just take that one, if we really get it that we don't know, and this is where I love the science of the whole thing. Okay, every moment of life, and make moment as small an amount of time as you want. Every moment of life is absolutely brand new. There is no way that we can possibly know something that has not happened. Now, it is true that in most people's lives, especially if you're not paying very close attention, it seems like you can know. Because, pretty much every day the sun comes up. Well, see, there's something that you can know. Well, no, you don't know it. It's just that the odds are really good that that's going to happen. Okay? So that's how that illusion of knowing gets created. Right? And ego wants to know. So what it does with people is it says blah, blah, blah. And if something like that happens, so you go to Atlantic City and you bet your whole paycheck on something and you lose the money and ego says, well, you should have known. You should have known that that was going to happen. Why did you do that? Why did you do something so stupid? Okay, and it's the same process that talks you into going there and doing that in the first place. So that whole structure is in place to keep ego at the center of somebody's life.
So I hear that and I get that. And so in practice, what we're doing is working to disidentify from ego and understanding that we are not ego and ego is not us. It's something that's just, they're two completely separate things, like who I really am and what ego is. And then there's that addiction piece that I wanted to talk about of, I mean, I could
being
say,
addicted to,
you know,
ego.
Right, or you can plug in whatever content. So in my case, like, I'm working with, like, love and relationship addiction and fantasy addiction, which is just another way of saying ego addiction, or even if it's a substance, mm-hmm. it's again, the same mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. So what I'm working with and what I want to do, my aim is to, you know, be in recovery of this addiction to ego. And just like any other addiction, it's a lifelong process. It's a huge practice, mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. a moment-by-moment thing. But somehow there's this, for me, addiction to the fantasy that there's going to be this big click that's going to happen where there's going to be this cataclysmic, like, disidentification where what you're saying to me about this whole process is going to become my permanent insight. Because, I mean, when you're laying it out so clearly, and as you're laying it out, I'm like, yeah, that's true. Like, nobody knows anything. It's all unknown. But then mm-hmm. it's just like a moment-by-moment falling for, I do know that the sun is going to come up tomorrow, or I do know that blah, blah, blah. But mm-hmm. it's weird because it's like I know I don't know. Like I
right.
it's,
I know, Gabriel, I know exactly what you mean. How can I know that it's not true and yet I know it. I know it and yet I know that I don't know it. Yep.
Yeah, and so my question, and of course you don't know and I don't know and no one knows the answer, but I still want to ask it anyway. Is, like, what is actually possible? Like, in the sense of this whole spirituality, awakening, enlightenment, or waking up thing, what is, like, mm-hmm. how much is it possible to, of course, that's for me to find out with my practice and everything, but, like, I have no idea what's actually possible. Do you know what I mean by that? With, as a
yeah.
human being, like,
yeah.
How much is it possible to not to live in the awareness that
yeah.
and the ongoing awareness that I can't know anything, and living in that open space of wonder and kind of excitement and kind of like a childlike see, the difference now is like I'm not naive anymore because I've been through so many human experiences that I had not gone through as like a very young child. And so
right.
that loss of naivete feels like a loss of innocence, but I'm actually into, like, I have never lost any ounce of innocence. I've just lost a lot of naivete, which is a completely different thing. But, like, how much is it possible to live in that innocence and that wonder of not knowing? And I don't know. So what can you tell me?
Well, that's basically a con, right? Because...
Okay.
Because wondering that, fantasizing or speculating about that, is the same process that a person
uh-huh.
could do worrying about paying the bills or worrying about what's going to happen to the kids or worrying about getting sick or worrying about...
Yeah.
It's the same process of doing something in the head... of ego around in the head, and ego doesn't actually care what the content is. It's happy to do that with any content. So if you want to noodle about enlightenment, it's as happy to noodle with you about enlightenment as to noodle about a relationship or about a job or about money or about anything else. It doesn't care.
So here...
As long as you're noodling.
Here's what I'm extrapolating out of what you just said. It is possible to end that noodling That's kind of like what I'm getting by implication of what you're saying, but it almost sounds like that's something that's happening, and by you saying that, it sounds like that doesn't need to be happening. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and it doesn't, which is why in most, again, whether it's religion, spirituality, psychology, whatever it is, and whether they talk about it this way or not, what people are doing is focusing the attention.
Yeah,
that's what we learn to do. We learn to put the attention where we want it instead of where it has gone habitually.
So the practice is to, yes, because that's the thing that feels addictive when you said habitually. I guess addiction and habit are similar. Like it feels, I feel like on some level I am choosing to be obsessed with ego and needling and wondering.
Yes. Yes.
On another level, it feels like it's a habit, and you know, is
that's
it
right.
like. So, and then I guess that combination feels like an addiction that I want to break. And, you know, you kind of have to hit a bottom, they say, and I feel like I'm there. I am so utterly exhausted by this addiction but the thing is, it's like, I want to stop being addicted right now. And
right.
I
Which, the way you laugh when you say that tells me that what you know is, that's part of the addiction.
Say that again.
Well, it's part of the setup. It's a whole, so if I said, I want to lose weight, but I can't, people think that the point is, I want to lose weight. But the point is, I want to lose weight, but I can't. That's all one thing.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, I want to break the addiction, but I don't because I sort of don't want to, and I'm not sure I could anyway. That's one whole thing.
In the weight losing weight example, if I want to lose weight, I lose weight. If I want to like do something, I do it. And so I understand a lot of people struggle with that. So
that's right.
In this process, though, of I want to end this unbelievable fascination with that incredibly rich mental world that has been my companion for most of my life, you're saying that in the same way that I know how to lose weight when I want to, I can actually just do that.
That's exactly right. It's the same process.
Yeah. Yep. Cool.
And I just realized we're at time. This one thing that I'd asked you to, and then you'll call back and you'll tell me what happened.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Let's take it into something else because I don't actually know how the fantasy, you know, I can't give an example of that because I don't know the content. But say it's alcohol, okay? It's alcohol, and you realize, I can't drink, I'm an addict, I need to stop, okay? And you decide, mm-hmm. and you're going to quit, by God, you're going to quit. And then mm-hmm. ego starts in. Oh, you can just have one. People are going to think you're, you know, whatever. Okay. And there's the talking you into it. And there's a tiny, tiny little message that comes through that says, you don't need to do that. That's mm-hmm. the one you're listening for. And the transformation happens when you choose that. Because right behind that, comes, oh, it's not going to matter, just this, okay? And it just ramps up the arguments for your destruction, right? But still small voice, that little bit of guidance saying, you don't need to, this is, you could get off the track right now, you don't need to do this.
Could I share really quickly something I heard that reminded me of what you're saying that I loved recently?
If we have about 1 minute.
Okay. So it's if I'm lost in a forest and there's a fire somewhere, you may have heard this, maybe not. You can just, by looking at that fire or that little teeny glimmer of light, even if it's, it is nighttime because you can see the fire, just by following that light that you're seeing off in the distance, you can actually get yourself out of the woods where you are. So it all comes to trusting and keeping your eye on that fire, because if you veer away from it, you could fall off a cliff. But, like, if you can keep walking in that direction, and just it's that trust of, like, this is enough, that still small voice, that little glimmer of light is enough to get me out of here. And that's
right.
The biggie, that trusting, that super silent, quiet voice.
That's right.
And ego is not super quiet and silent, at least not in my case.
No, it's screaming and yelling all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just wanted to share that because I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that good?
Just like Well, and it's the eyes on the prize, right? We see where we're going, and then we're learning not to waver. And if we waver, we waver. Okay. But as soon as we get our bearings again, we take off again. Yeah.
I love
All
it.
Right.
I love the focus of that. Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thank you, Gabriel. Take
Keep
care.
Keep me on the white list.
You're on the white list. Don't not to worry. You're on the white list. We got you.
Thanks, Michael. Good night.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. And that was a fascinating way to end a fascinating show, Sharon. So thank you.
We know how to have a good time, don't we? Thank you,
yes,
Michael.
We
thank
do.
You so much.
Thank you, Sharon.
Talk to you soon.
Go happy.
Okay. Go happy.